as Richard Briers presents Christmas Briers.
And that unique rendition of Jingle Bells plays us into Christmas Briers, an evergreen compilation of music, mirth, and seasonal tomfoolery. I'm Richard Briers, and I'll be playing host to Bob Newhart, the Goons, the Glums, Hinge and Bracket, Cleo Lane, the Handel Opera Society Chorus and Orchestra. In fact, it's going to get pretty crowded in here by the look of things. Just to add to the confusion, I'll be dropping in the odd useless fact about Christmas past and present, and, oh yes, there's a Christmas quiz, so please have pencil and paper handy. Well, first off, we've got a bit of music from someone who needs no introduction. But as it's Christmas, I'll give him one anyway. Nat King Cole.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Ah, Christmas. Chestnuts roasting by a roaring turkey, family tucking into the Yuletide log, carol singers up to their chins in snow. Well, it's a Christmas. The Christmas we're all familiar with is less romantic. Continuous relays to the off-license, the annual fight to the death with the fairy lights, the whole ghastly business of Christmas shopping. Oh, well, thank goodness that's all over. Well, not quite over. There's still the ritual returning of gifts to look forward to. Here's Bob Newhart.
I guess anyone who has ever combed their hair, any man who's ever combed his hair, and has noticed one little hair on the comb, has thought to himself, I'm going to lose all my hair. See, I'm going to be bald the rest of my life. And should I buy a toupee? Any man has often in secrecy, has said this to himself. Should I buy a tube? Now, very often he makes the decision, or sometimes the decision is made for him by his wife. This is the complaint department of a large department store. I am. Do you have a private room of some kind? I'd like to discuss returning the Christmas gift. No, it's not underwear or anything like that. It's, see, my wife bought me a toupee, and I'd like to return it. It's under the hat, yeah. I don't know what model it is. No, it's the crew cut with the widow's peak. Yeah. Mr. Wonderful, is that? Well, whatever you call it. Anyway, I'd like to return it, see. I'll show it to you in just a minute. There's some people coming. Don't stare at me. Just look at me. Just wait till they go by this. Are they by now? See, there it is. And, the problem is, I notice people pass me on the street and they start laughing, you know, after they've gone by. And it makes me look years younger, I know, but they still laugh, see. And we went to this party, see, around Christmas time, and I bent down to put some cheese dip on it, on a cracker. And it fell, you know, the toupee fell into the cheese dip, you know, and everybody stopped having cheese dip. And, the hostess, you know, she started crying and everything. And so we spent a couple hours trying to fish it out of the cheese dip. And I took it home and I put it in the washer dryer, you know. We have that's another problem. We have one of those windows, you know, and the kids like to sit and watch it, you know. And now they're mad at me because I'm returning it. See. Now I don't want the full exchange. I like to get a real cheap one, you know, just to put in the washer for the kids. Well, no, see, I didn't know my wife was getting it for me. Looking back, you know, one morning she came in with a piece of paper and she had me put my head on it and she traced it. But, she never told me why she did it, you know. So, well, see, the main complaint is it doesn't do, you know, what you say it's going to do. I understand it makes me look years younger, yeah, but see... Yeah, I know it stays on a hurricane. See, but, see, we're from Iowa, and, we really don't get that many hurricanes, you know? See, mainly I want it to stay on when I go down for the cheese dip, you know? The price tag. You'd have to have the price tag before you could, give me a return. Can I use your phone a minute? Yeah. You want to take care of these other people?
Hi?
Yeah, listen. You want to call the Hennessy's? Ask them to look in the bottom of the dish, see if there's a price tag in there.
I can't say I've ever been given a toupee. I wouldn't have anywhere to put it. Well, not yet, anyway. Touch wood. But, you know, it is incredibly difficult choosing presents for some people. I always think the safest bet is a bottle of booze. My brother-in-law has the same policy. In fact, the two of us have been exchanging the same bottle of whiskey for about 10 years now. It saves on wrapping paper, you see. Anyway, the tradition of giving Christmas gifts is something the Romans have to answer for. The whole thing was set up by the Emperor Caligula, who passed a law saying that everyone had to give him a present. Which gives us the first question in the Christmas quiz. Stand by, please, now. Who played the part of Caligula in the TV series I, Claudius? I'll give you a clue. It wasn't Shirley Bassey.
the minute you walked in the joint. I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender. Good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every man I see. Hey, big spender, spend a little time with me. Wouldn't you like to have fun, fun, fun? How's about a few laughs, laughs? I could show you a good time. Let me show you a good time. The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. So would you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every man I see. Hey, big spender.
Big Spender, a title which most of us can claim this time of year, and we've still got the sales to come.
Hello, Harry.
Hello, Derek. I like your suit, Harry.
Thanks, Derek. It's a lightweight cotton summer suit, only £49 at the Martins of Bond Street sale.
I expect they've got hundreds of great menswear bargains at fantastically reduced prices in the Martins of Bond Street sale.
They certainly have, but I should hurry. The Martins of Bond Street sale ends Saturday.
Sorry, Harry. Mustache.
Where are you going?
The Martin of Bond Street sale.
See you there.
But you've already been to the Martin of Bond Street sale, Harry.
Right. And now I'm going back to the Martin of Bond Street sale for another great menswear bargain.
You better hurry. The Martin of Bond Street sale ends Saturday.
I know. I told you the Martin of Bond Street sale ends Saturday.
Did you?
Yeah,
I'm so excited by the thought of hundreds of great menswear bargains at fantastically reduced prices at the Martins of Bond Street sale, which ends Saturday, but I instantly forget what people say to me.
Don't forget the Martins of Bond Street sale, which ends on Saturday.
I won't. The Martins of Bond Street sale, which ends on Saturday.
Yes, Saturday.
Hurry.
Yes.
Today's Sunday.
That extract, courtesy of Radioactive. However, next time somebody tells you that Christmas has become unbearably commercial, remember these words by Charles Dickens, written in 1836. There are people who will tell you that Christmas is not what it used to be, that each succeeding Christmas has found some cherished hope or happy prospect of the year before dimmed or passed away. Never heed such dismal reminiscences. Do not select the merriest of the 365 days for your doleful recollections, but draw your chair nearer the blazing fire, fill your glass, empty it offhand, and fill another. Yes, old Dickens obviously knew how to enjoy himself, and to illustrate the point, he left us A Christmas Carol, which was a classic of English literature, till 1959, when the Goons got hold of it. While they're on the subject, can you write down the name of Scrooge's ghostly business partner?
And here, at Christmas, we see the great venerable offices of Scrooge and Marley, importers and exporters for the great year of 1887.
Marley is dead. Marley is dead.
No, I'm not.
No. Yes, you are. Now, to enter certain things in the all-weather level of the ledgers. One barrel of Blunger's Violent Stone and Ginger Purge. One gill of Rare Leopard Oil. In nukes. One box of Feathered Shirt Lifters.
Knock, knock.
Who is it?
Short man, Captain Sabocca.
Scratch it.
Itchy.
On my cool. On my cool.
Oh, you've got an itchy cool.
Well, they're the kind of joke they told in 1887.
Bar me my tea and only two sugars.
Flask, one too many. I'll recover it. Stand back!
Hello. Care to join me in a cup of tea?
What? Have you seen three lumps of sugar come this way?
No, and I've been here since the milk came.
Come on now. Get out and get back to your desks, both of you, except Eccles and Ned.
Oh, for no reason at all, folks. What's the date today?
24th of December, Christmas Eve.
So they both fall on the same day. Must be slippery.
Yes, well, I don't think we can wait any longer for any more laughs on that one.
But, of course, they did get more laughs out of that one and continue to do so. More from them later, when Min and Henry travel to Africa in search of the international Christmas pudding. Ow. But continuing on a literary vein, here's a Shakespearean weather report. Blow, blow, the winter winds. That song from As You Like It, sung as I Like It by Cleo Lane. And for the third question in our Christmas quiz, can you tell me where As You Like It was set? You know, narration is much more difficult than it sounds. Just ask anyone who's had to narrate the Sunday school nativity play. You see, most people talk too quickly when they're nervous. I talk too quickly even when I'm not nervous. And I've seen narrators unwittingly transform a 15-minute religious spectacle into a 2-minute French farce. The narrator rattling away 19 to the dozen, behind him Bethlehem in chaos, Jesus and Mary rushing on stage, tripping over the shepherds who were trying to get off, wise men falling over their robes in an effort to keep up with the story, positive maelstrom of sheep, cattle and oxen, complete disaster. Anyway, here's a rather neater account of the whole thing.
Hello, Mrs. Vinton. Oh, I'm so glad you could get along to see a rehearsal of our nativity play. Can you squeeze in there? I'm afraid our chairs are a wee bitty wee, as they say, north of the border. Now then, children, we're going to start our rehearsal. Where are my Mary and Joseph? That's right, Shirlene, take Dennis by the hand and come and sit nice and quietly on this bench, right here, in the middle. No, don't drag him. He'll come if you leave him alone. And don't hit each other. Mary and Joseph were friends. That's better. Now, who are my wise men? You're a wise man, aren't you, Geoffrey? Aren't you? Or what are you, then? Oh, you're a cattle, are you? And you're going to know. Well, that's splendid. Now go over to Miss Bolting. You're long gone. Miss Bolting, you're organizing the animals and the angels, aren't you? Yes, he's one of yours. Now, wise men, here, please. Billy, Peter, and George. And George, wise men never do that. Now, my kings, please. Of course, Mrs. Vinton, we know that by tradition the wise men and the kings are one and the same. But we did want everyone in our nursery school to have a chance. So we've taken a few liberties, and I don't think anyone's going to mind. Now, my kings, Sydney, Neville, Cliff. Oh, yes, and Nicholas Ananiades. We have four kings in our nativity play, I'm afraid. We happen to have four lovely crowns, and it seems such a pity not to use them. Sydney, put your crown on straight, please. No, not over one eye. What have you got under your jersey? You know that's not the place for a hamster, is it? Now, put him straight back in his little pen, please. Sydney, which one have you got? Twiggy or Harold Wilson? Well, then, who's got Twiggy? Neville, put him back at once. Poor Twiggy and Harold Wilson. It isn't very Christmassy for them under your jersey. Sydney, I think it serves you right if Harold Wilson bit you. And don't bite him back. Well, because he's smaller than you are. Are you bleeding? Well, don't make such a fuss then. And Cliff, put your crown on, please. It's too big, is it? Well, let's see. Oh, it is, isn't it? Where are you? Oh, there you are. Nice to see you again. I tell you what, change with Nicholas. Nicholas, I think you can manage a big crown, can't you? You've got just the ears for it. And look, if you pull your ears down a little bit, that'll hold it up, won't it? And lean back. That's it, that's it. Now stay like that, dear. Don't move. Now, wise men and kings, I don't want you to muddle yourselves with each other. Now, you say that. Now then, shepherds. Come on, shepherds. Jimmy, you're my first shepherd. No, you're not a racing car. And Caroline, you're a shepherd. I'm afraid you can't wear your little Bo Peep costume because, you see, there aren't any little girl shepherdesses in our play. No, they're all boy shepherds, and you're a girl being a boy shepherd. Yes, it is wrong, but we have to settle for it. But I tell you what, Caroline, if you're good, perhaps you can wear a lovely grey beard. Would that be fun? Yes. George! Don't do that. Now, Jimmy, you remember what you see up in the sky? It's something lovely, isn't it? No, not a baby. Try again. It's a lovely star, isn't it? And you're going to put up your hand and you're going to point to it. And what are you going to say when you do that? No, Sydney, he's not going to say, please, may I go to the bathroom. Children, that isn't funny. It's a perfectly natural function and you might just as well get used to it. Now, come on, Jimmy. You're going to say, behold, aren't you? Yes, you are, dear. Well, you said it yesterday. Well, if you'd rather say it tomorrow, I think, well, perhaps you're right. Well, we have broken the back of the play, so... All right, children, you might as well get ready to go home and hand in your crowns very gently, please. No, you can't wear your crown home on the bus, Sydney. Well, Mrs. Vinton, I hope it's going to be all right on the night, but I think perhaps next year we might just make do with a Christmas carol.
Hello, what are you kiddies doing out of bed this time of night?
We're singing Christmas carols.
Don't stay out too long, kiddies. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Policeman.
Well, come on, let's start singing outside the house.
Now then, what do you children want? What do they call you, a postboy?
No, I'm a carol singer.
Are you really? Well, here's a flippy piece for you.
Ooh, that's fine. We've learned something already. Let's try this house.
Go away. Don't you hear me? Go away. What are you doing here?
We're carol singers.
Oh, you are you? Well, don't come singing carols round here. I've never heard such a noise in all my life.
Isn't a noise. It's beautiful carol. And if you give us a penny, we'll sing you a lot more.
Now, look here. Supposing I gave you a shilling not to sing any more carols outside my house.
What, a whole shilling?
Yes, a whole shilling, providing you don't sing carols outside my house.
Ooh, thank you, sir.
Here. Didn't I give you a shilling not to sing outside my house?
Well, we're not. We're singing next door.
Well, here's another shilling. Now go right away into the next street.
Aren't we lucky? We've earned 2 shillings and sixpence already. We haven't. We've only earned sixpence. The other was hush money.
The legendary Harry Hemsley and the inimitable Joyce Grenfell, though not in that order. Of course, the Nativity is central to Christmas, and even the most irregular churchgoers roll up for the candlelit ceremony on Christmas Eve, roll being the operative word. And then again, some of us are so full of Christmas spirit we can't actually make it out of the front door, and it is worth the effort. There's been some wonderful religious music composed for Christmas, and none more inspiring than Handel's Messiah. As you rake your mind for Mr. Handel's first name, I'll play you a chorus from the Messiah itself. Chorus was sung and played by the Handel Opera Society Chorus and their orchestra. Christmas is the time of year when all the relatives come together and remember why it is they always stay apart. It's the time of year when great Aunt Agatha reveals that despite total deafness, she can hear the word brandy from a distance of several miles. It's the time when Auntie Molly lets her hair down and Uncle Arthur takes his off. It's when Grandfather has to be dissuaded from unscrewing his wooden leg to demonstrate the hokey-cokey whoopsie. It's when all human life is there, and the mother-in-law as well. Yes, it's an occasion for the family to have some riotous fun.
Oh, Ron. What a wonderful Christmas. When Mr. Glum passed round the plates of turkey and all your family was smiling at me and nodding, I got a feeling of belonging. What did you get, Ron?
I got the parson's nose, eh?
Oh, Ron, are you still hungry then?
Yes, eh?
Well, perhaps you'd like to go back in the dining room.
No, eh?
You mean you'd rather stay here on the sofa with me?
Yes, eh?
Oh, Ron. Doesn't your hunger matter now we're here together?
No, eh?
My Ron. Tell me why your hunger doesn't matter, Ron.
I brought the turkey in with me.
All the time in the darkness, that carcass has been sitting on the sofa with us.
No, beloved, I wouldn't put a turkey on the sofa.
I'd be cross if I didn't love you so much. Let me rest my cheek against your chest again. Where's my little hollow? In there. Where did you put it, Ron?
What, eh?
The turkey.
It's up me pullover.
Oh, I'll have all stuffing in my earring.
Now, don't take on, Eth. It's only a dead bird. I'll put it away.
You are thoughtless, Ron. You just don't think about certain things.
I do, Eth.
No, not
go
now.
Go on, Eth. Just a kiss.
Oh, it's Ron, I couldn't. Not on top of mince pies.
It won't hurt.
Hello. Good old Ron, eh? Teaspoonful of brandy butter and he's a ravening beast. Well, I'm not here to interrupt. Ron, have you seen your mother's spare dentures? I can't find the bottle opener anywhere. Ah, here they are.
Sit down on the sofa a minute, Mr. Glum. It's quieter in here.
Oh, I think I will if I can find my way in the dark. Where are we now? Sorry, Eth. Oh, dear. My word, Eth, you want to put a woolly on me, girl. You're all goose pimples.
That's the turkey, Dad.
The turkey?
Yes.
Well, just you take that back inside. There's other members of the family besides you. Uncle Charlie will be wanting some soon.
Oh, is he coming round, Mr. Glum?
Slowly, yes. It's just holding his head under the chap. Oh, and before I go, Eth, I must thank you for your Christmas present. Not only was it beautiful and useful, but it was just what I always needed.
Oh, Mr. Glum, they were only a set of table mats.
Oh, that's what they were, was they? Table mats, eh? Oh, fancy. Oh, well. Nice having table mats, isn't it, Ron?
Why, Dad?
Well, for whenever we have a formal dinner party, you ignorant know-nothing. You place a table mat in front of each guest so that the cloth is not marked when they put their feet on the table.
No, Mr. Glum, it's to go under their plate.
That's what I said, isn't it?
You must know who that was. Yes, the Glums. But do you know who Santa Claus is? Well, like so many other things, he's a European invention who was developed and marketed by the Americans. Our current image of Santa Claus is derived partly from the legend of St. Nicholas, patron saint, I'm informed, of fishermen, brewers, coopers, pawnbrokers, and Russians, and partly from the Father Christmas of old English mummers' plays. Anyway, whatever his pedigree, most kids believe that a portly resident of the North Pole, for no particular reason, dresses up in red and white every year and hands out an endless supply of presents. Of course, as children get older, they learn to be suspicious of free gifts. That's when the awkward questions start. And talking of awkward questions, who's the artist on this record?
I've been to school, I know the rule, I've learned my ABC. I've learned that one and one is two, and two make three. But there's only one thing puzzling me. does Father Christmas hang his stocking? And when does Father Christmas go to bed? Who brings all his presents just before the dawn? Or does he get excited early on Christmas morn? Where does Father Christmas hang his stocking? It seems to be a mystery, because if Father Christmas has to hang his stocking, then tell me who is Santa, Santa Claus? Where does Father Christmas keep his reindeer? And where does Father Christmas park his sleigh? Does he hang his stocking near the Christmas tree? Or does he hang it on the bedpost just like you and me? Where does Father Christmas hang his stocking? It seems to be a mystery, because if Father Christmas has to hang his stocking, then tell me who is Santa, Santa Claus? At school we learn about the shepherds and the three wise men, about the bright and shining star that led to Bethlehem. There's only one thing still not very plain. If anyone can help me, please explain. Where does Father Christmas hang his stocking? And when does Father Christmas go to bed? Who brings all his presents just before the dawn? Does he get excited early on Christmas morn? Where does Father Christmas hang his stocking? It seems to be a mystery, because if Father Christmas has to hang his stocking, then tell me who is Santa, Santa Claus?
Was someone other than George Formby with one of the great unanswered questions surrounding Santa Claus, like how he manages to be in several department stores simultaneously and how he gets into centrally heated flats. Still, it doesn't stop us pretending to believe in him, does it? Have you noticed how at Christmas parties everyone sinks to the intellectual level of the smallest person in the room? In 1 minute the room is full of adults, someone comes in with a baby, and the next minute we're all on our hands and knees making baby noises and trying to retrieve the building bricks from under the piano. Every so often you see the baby at the centre of all this looking absolutely horrified by the spectacle. I'm sure they're much more intelligent than we suspect.
Out of the mouths of babes and sucklings, as the poet said, comes all manner of things. But be that as it may, we are now joining once again those 3 or 4 month old babies outside the supermarket. Morning, Rupert.
Morning, Hugh. So your mother's been giving you beef broth again, then? You're covered in it.
It's terrible, isn't it? She's such a messy feeder. What's that stain on your bib?
Fish and macaroni.
I thought I recognized it. Is your old woman making you treat yourself yet? Because mine is.
Good Lord, no. What cheek. Are you standing for it, Rupert?
Well, I tried non-cooperation for a few meals, and I just starved. Of course, the old man was being very tough. Stupid, great idiot.
Yeah.
Stood there stuffing it in himself as a sort of demonstration effort. And then he puked.
Well, I'm not surprised the muck we get.
Actually, talking about puking, I'm a bit worried. My old lady's sick every morning. She says it's because she's having another baby. Well, I've been sick every morning for weeks. I mean, I'm... Hang on, here comes Cyril and his ghastly mother.
Oh,
come
no.
on, scream, everyone.
I'm just going to get some din-din for you, chucky-chucky-chucky.
Din-din.
Chucky-chucky.
Morning, Cyril, sweetie.
Oh, do belt up, you fellows. I say you two look in a right old mess.
Rupert thinks he's having a baby.
Oh, wet nappies.
Might be a rabbit for all I know.
Hey! I'm getting christened next week.
You're
How
not
about that?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I did that weeks ago. Oh. Everybody came, I got soaked, and they had a party.
Now, I must tell you, I had a laugh last week. Mother's been trying to teach me for weeks to say nanny.
How
it's embarrassing. So just after my bath, I gave her a big smile and said,
Auntie Dory.
I haven't got an Auntie Dory. I nearly killed her, my only laugh of the week.
Shut up, for Pete's sake. Here comes the vicar. Plan B.
Daddy!
It's all right. It's all right. That shifted him. His wife looked a bit rattled, too. Look out. Here comes your mother again, Cyril. I'll
pretend to be asleep.
Okay.
Well, ha-ha. Who's asleep, then? Who's asleep, then?
Mm. I am, you silly old bag, and stop poking my feet.
The I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again team brought us that insight into child psychology. I must say, young kids can be a bit trying over Christmas. I can still remember being woken up in the small hours of Christmas morning by the sound of tearing cardboard and squeals of premature delight. Still, forgive and forget, and that's the effect Christmas has, isn't it? People with the temperament of Genghis Khan suddenly go all weak and gooey, as in that wonderful incident in 1914 when troops on both sides came out of the trenches and played football in no man's land. Mike Harding tells the story.
Christmas Eve in 1914, stars were burning, burning bright, and all along the western front, guns were lying still and quiet. Men lay dozing in the trenches, in the cold and in the dark, far away behind the lines. Village dog began to bark. Some lay thinking of their families. Some sang songs while others were quiet, rolling fags and playing brag to pass away this Christmas night. As they watched the German trenches, something moved in no man's land, and through the dark there came a soldier, carrying a white flag in his hand. Then from both sides, men came running, crossing into no man's land. Through the barbed wire, mud, and shallow, shyly stood there, shaking hands. Fritz brought out cigars and brandy. Tommy brought corned beef and fags. Stood there talking, laughing, singing. The moon shone down on no man's land. Christmas Day, we all played football in the mud of no man's land. Tommy brought some Christmas pudding. Fritz brought out a German band. When they beat us at the football, we shared out all the grub and drink. And Fritz showed me faded photo of brown-haired girl back in Berlin. Four days after, no one fired, not one shell disturbed the night. For old Fritz and Tommy Atkins. They both lost the will to fight, so they withdrew us from the trenches, sent us far behind the lines, sent fresh troops to take our places, told the guns prepare to fire. And next day, in 1914, flares were burning, burning bright. The message came, prepare, offensive, over the top, we're going tonight. And men stood waiting in the trenches, looked out across our football park, and all upon the western front, the Christmas guns began to bark. Men stood waiting in the trenches, looked out across our football park, and all along the western front, the Christmas guns began to bark.
Yes, Christmas has strange effects on people. Still to be unwrapped, we have More Goonery, The Kingsingers, Hinge and Bracket, Woody Allen, and the second half of the festive quiz. Occasionally, I have heard it said there are some people who actually talk to each other over Christmas. They say the British are eccentric. But if you're one of them, Roy Walker may have some jokes you could use.
Christmas is lovely, but I was married at Christmas time. Remember my honeymoon? She once wrote a note to Santa Claus. Dear Santa, please may I have my stockings filled the way nature filled Wrecker Welsh's. P.S. If there's any left over, the same for the jumper. I took my little girl along to see Santa Claus. She kicked him on the shins. He said, what'd you do that for? He said, that's for last year. Doesn't matter what you buy, kids. They're never satisfied. I overheard a conversation last year. A little Irish boy, a little Scots boy were talking. The Scots boy said to the Irishman, what'd you get for Christmas? He said, I got $6 million man, action man, and the bicycle. Said the little Scots boy, what did you get? He said, nothing. She said, me ma boiled us some eggs and told us it was Easter. Our Shuey was born at Christmas. He was a premature baby. His mother wasn't expecting him. I felt sorry for Shuey. He was an unloved, unwanted child. He'd all sorts of jobs. He used to work in a prune tasting factory. It was a good job. You work one day and you were off three. And he worked in the ready-made department of Burton's the Tailors. This fella came in with three legs. He said, excuse me, have you got a suit to fit me? Shuey said, if I have some, he's getting a sack. He finished up as a long-distance lorry driver in the Isle of Man. He came home last Christmas Eve. He'd been working hard. He said to the wife, where's the turkey? He said, there's no turkey. I hadn't enough money to buy it. He said, I give you the money this morning before I went out. She didn't know. She said, the coal man came. I told him to leave 3 bags. The parrot told him to leave 10. I had to pay him. All I could get you was 2 kippers. He got a hold of the parrot. He pulled all his feathers out. He wrung its neck. He beat it over the head with a poker and threw it through the window into the garden. While he was doing that, the cat had his kippers. He got a hold of the cat. He put his hand down his throat. He pulled it inside out. Oh, he threw it through the window out into the garden. It was lying beside the parrot. The parrot raised itself on one wing. It opened one eye. Looked at the cat. Said, "How many bags of coal did you order?"
Merry Christmas!
Now then, question number 6 coming up. How long would it take to roast a 10-pound turkey? And no conferring. It's quite a recent import, the turkey. They were imported from America to replace the traditional Christmas dish of roast peacock. I do think at Christmas we should consider those less fortunate than ourselves, and turkeys must come high on that list, as Roaring Jelly points out.
I'm only a poor little turkey.
Gobble, gobble.
I live on a big turkey farm. The social life's great. I've got lots of mates. And the shed that we sleep in is warm. I'm only a poor little turkey. I live on a big turkey farm. Our farmer is good. And he gives us our food, and I don't think he'd do us no harm.
Not much.
He's only a poor little turkey.
Gobble, gobble.
And Christmas is coming quite soon.
What's Christmas?
Moving on from the turkey, we come, after discreetly loosening the belt, to Christmas pudding. It's a fearsome invention, the Christmas pudding, filled with small coins to choke the baby and break Grandma's false teeth, then incinerated, charring the ivy decorations and consuming every paper hat within a 5-yard radius. Still, like a lot of traditions, we continually ignore the damage it does in our efforts to keep it alight. I've got no idea where the first Christmas pudding came from, but I rather like Spike Milligan's theory that it was tracked down portion by portion in the jungles of West Africa.
Melodies, have you tucked the end of the sheets in, Henry?
Yes, Henry.
Good. You put the hot water bottle in?
Yes.
Good, yes. Good.
Oh, Min.
Very hot tonight. I think I'll have a cold water bottle.
That makes... Here, we will have to get these tents redecorated.
Right.
The wallpaper is peeling.
Good. I'll get a new roll from London, Henry.
Good.
Yes, it is good.
Did you put the tiger out, Min?
Yes, I did. I put the tiger out, Henry.
Good, and don't forget to tell the camel driver no milk tomorrow.
Oh, you.
What?
What's that? What's that? Oh.
It's all right, Min. It's just those noisy people in the tent upstairs. Who's that walking about upstairs?
I'm the famous Echo.
He's the famous Eccles, and he's got friends in Min. Do you mind taking those noisy boots off?
Okay.
Ah, that's better. I didn't know he had 3 legs, Henry.
He hasn't, Min, he hasn't. He has a 1-legged friend. Good. Good night, Min.
Good night, buddy. Oh.
He's got 2 1-legged friends.
It's that or 1 3-legged friend, Henry.
Yes. Well, good night, Min.
Good night, little naughty Henry. Good night, little Henry. Good night. Oh! Watch that. We'll all be murdered in our beds.
Is that the tiger, Min? Let him in. Let him in.
Come in, pussy. Oh, oh. Oh, it isn't a tiger, Henry. It's a savage portion of the Christmas pudding.
Help! Echoes, help!
Help, Echoes!
Help, Echoes, help!
You two down there, stop that naughty noise. I'm trying to get some sleep. I'm a brain worker.
I'm sorry, Echoes. Not so loud, Min. Quietly. Help, Echoes.
Keep calm, old chapel.
Echoes.
Keep calm. I heard your refined screams. Now, what's the trouble?
There's a savage portion of international Christmas pudding loose in the long grass.
Good heavens! Just what I'm looking for. Quick, surround Africa!
Yes, surround Africa. That's the nice thing about radio. You can do the impossible. Like make crackers go off with a bang. See? It's incredible, isn't it? Now, what have we got here? Paper hat, three sizes too small. Plastic whistle. Don't think much of that. What else is there? No motto? Oh. Oh, well. What about a few quotes instead?
Well, now, time to break off from the quiz now to air some of our favourite quotations. Mrs. Margaret Jackson of Chipping Camden in Gloucestershire came across this inscription on a tombstone in the English cemetery on the island of San Michele in Venice. The inscription ended with the words,
"On the 8th of August, 1912, he left us in peace."
And Mr. T. Eastwood, who listens to us in Odemira in Portugal, recalls many years ago taking his four-year-old daughter into a village church in Gloucestershire. He drew her attention to a stained glass window which showed Jesus with a saint standing on either side of him. "That is gentle Jesus," said Mr. Eastwood. His daughter, looking at the two saints, asked,
"Who are those two, meek and mild?"
Well, out of the mouth of babes and sucklings. Yeah. John Lahr, a favourite quotation of any kind?
Well, I suppose people think that if you write or act or do anything, that you sort of loaded with confidence. But writing, especially, at least for me, is something that is hard. And one I carry around with me is something that Blake said, which is just simply, "If the sun and moon should doubt, they would immediately go out." Which I like very much. And the other quote, which was said by the pundit and economist, John Kenneth Galbraith, to the graduating class at Yale, I like the spirit. He said, "If you can't comfort the afflicted, then afflict the comfortable."
Very good. Isabel Lucas, a favorite quotation or something out of the mouth of a babe or something, perhaps?
Yes, I've got a lovely one. It was at Christmas time, and my little niece, we were trying to amuse her and amuse ourselves at the same time, and we were playing I Spy, and she was young enough to be able to talk and to begin to know her alphabet but not to spell properly. And nowadays they don't learn ABC, they learn ABC and all that. So anyhow, she was saying, "I spy something beginning with qu." And we thought, well, there are no pictures of the Queen. And we looked around, we couldn't see anything, and finally she said, "It's there, it's there." "What is it, Zoe?" "The Christmas tree."
Norman painting.
Two things about sin. Oscar Wilde defined a pessimist as a man who, when faced with two evils, chooses both. But Mae West, on the other hand, said when she's faced with two evils, she always tries the one she hasn't tried before.
And on the subject of quotes, who said, I worked myself up from nothing to a state of extreme poverty. I'll give you a clue. It was the same man who said he wouldn't want to join any club that would have him as a member. Which is how I feel about any choir which would have me as a member. The trick with singing Christmas carols is to stand next to someone who's in tune and make as little noise as possible. Alternatively, hire a group of people who can do it properly, like the King Singers.
Oh, deck all with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la. Fill the glasses, raise the water, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Sing the ancient Christmas carol, fa-la-la-la-la, fa-la-la-la-la.
See the flowing bowl before us.
Big as far!
Start the band and join the chorus. Follow me in merry measure. While we sing of mirth and pleasure.
While we sing of mirth and pleasure.
While we sing of mirth and pleasure. La 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 la. Mind is of the wind and weather. Very Christmas to you.
Illuminare Jerusalem, which I imagine is the traditional Roman order to switch on the Christmas decorations. Hence question number 7. Who switched on the Christmas lights in London's Regent Street last year? He's had a fair bit of publicity since then, a lot more than the poor unsung hero who switched them off. Still, being in the public eye has its disadvantages, you know. Everyone starts taking the mickey out of you. In fact, Christmas is positively open season for comedians. You can bet your life that anyone doing a comedy spectacular on the BBC is being mercilessly lampooned by the fellows on the other side. Here's Christopher Barry having a go at Ronnie Corbett and Kelly Monteith.
And now, a special edition of the Master Game, the quarterfinals of the Celebrity Chess Tournament. Tonight between Ronnie Corbett and Kelly Monteith. The game is already in progress, with Corbett to move.
Now, my queen's in danger. I must... No. I must watch his knight. Because as my producer said, he said... No. No, I'm not funny. As my producer said, he said, whatever you do, he said, try and concentrate on the game, he said, because people will be able to hear you thinking, he said. For goodness sake, he said, try, he said, and avoid saying the same thing again and again and again and again, he said. Whatever you do, he said, don't do that. And also, don't digress, he said. For heaven's sake, you are there to play chess. Anyway, I've got right off the topic. I've got to move my queen, so I will. Queen to knight 4.
He's moved. I don't believe it. He's darn well moved. Incredible. See, I thought he was never going to move. Have you ever moved apartments? No, neither have I. I live in a restaurant. Well, you'd think so, the number of routines I do about restaurants. That's incredible. Does your voice ever do that, huh? You're going along, speaking normally, and then your voice suddenly gets squeaky as it reaches the end of a sentence? It's incredible. Your voice ever do that in a restaurant, huh? Squeak. Anyway, I guess I better start thinking about this chess game, huh? I guess. Did you ever lose your baggage at the airport, then check in at a hotel, and they give you an incredibly large key, huh? An immense key, a huge key, a bigger key than my ego, huh? Go out and eat a meal in a restaurant, huh? You didn't? Darn it, these are the only 3 things that ever happened to me. Golly, these things only happen when you're a comedian from Canada and you have to keep flying over here to do your shows. I better move. Queen to knight 7. Checkmate.
For heaven's sake, checkmate. for goodness sake. For goodness sake, for goodness sake, heaven's sake. That's it. Checkmate for me. And a checkmate for me. Checkmate.
That excerpt was taken from Radio 4's Son of Cliché. But I must say, when it comes to Christmas entertainment, it takes a lot to beat a really good film. Here's the most famous Christmas song from the most famous Christmas film of all time, White Christmas. The song was made famous by Bing Crosby, but can you name the man and the woman who co-starred in the film?
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your day merry and bright, and may all your Christmases be white.
I'm dreaming of a
Crosby gave us that version of White Christmas, a phenomenon we last saw in London in, well, you tell me. Perhaps you wrote it in your diary. You know, I'm constantly surprised by the number of people who keep diaries. I don't know where they find the time for it. Peter Hall, Evelyn Waugh, Dame Hilda Brackett.
Well, I don't care what you say, Abney. In 100 years' time or so, this pathetic little scribble of mine, as you call the record of my life, may rank with the Greville Memoirs, Sir Walter Scott's journal, and the diary of Fanny Burney.
I hardly think so, dear. Your scratchy little diaries tell us nothing of the great events of the time. It's all just tittle-tattle about yourself.
Well, Pepys's diary is all just tittle-tattle about himself, isn't it?
No, that's where you're wrong. Pepys wrote a complete picture of his age. For one thing, it contains a wealth of information about the Navy.
Believe me, Abney. My diaries are not lacking in information about the Navy.
No, but yours are only personal details about sailors. And then again, Pepys described the Great Fire of London, yeah, and the Great Plague.
Well, they were before my time. I bet your diary's full of them. Especially the plague. Oh, that would have appealed to you, yes. You look as if you've dressed for it.
There you are, you see. You take an occurrence of great historical importance and you bring it down to a matter of clothing.
That's not true.
All right, then. All right. That diary you've got there, what year is it?
1953, I've told you.
Right. Now, have a look at your entry for June the 2nd.
June the 2nd.
Yes, what happened on that day?
Let me see now. Oh, yes, we went to London. I was wearing... Well, it doesn't matter what I was wearing. We bought some sandwiches on the train.
What sort of sandwiches?
I don't know.
How much were they?
It doesn't say.
Well, there you are, you see. I mean, two interesting little bits of social detail totally omitted. And when we got to London, where did we go?
To Westminster.
That's more promising.
And then to the Red Lion in Parliament Street.
Sorry I spoke.
We were taken there by Hugo and Gregory.
And who were Hugo and Gregory?
I haven't the foggiest idea.
And doesn't that precious diary of yours tell you who they were?
No, it does not. All it says here is, I shall never forget them. Anyway, they took us to the Red Lion for champagne and whatnot.
And what about the Queen?
What Queen?
Our Queen, Hilda. Queen Elizabeth II, you must know the one. What do you say about her?
I don't say anything about her, dear. She wasn't in the Red Lion.
Now, I wonder what she was doing that day.
Well, if you want to find that out, you'll have to look at her diary, not mine.
Hilda, June the 2nd, 1953, was Coronation Day, and you haven't even mentioned it.
Well, there's no need to get so het up about it. Someone's bound to have made a note of it somewhere.
I mean, you haven't even recorded your impressions of it, have you?
Well, how could I? The coronation took place in Westminster Abbey and things. I was down the street in the Red Lion, so you. And you were Squiffy.
How do you know that?
Because it says so here.
Where?
Here. It says, even Evatney seemed to be enjoying herself.
It doesn't say I was squiffy.
No, but if you gave the impression you were enjoying yourself, you must have been.
That, of course, was Evatney Hinge and Dame Hilda Brackett, two grand old dames of English comedy. I'm sure they'd be more than welcome at the outrageous party which Noel Coward is holding just after I've given the answers to the Christmas quiz. So, pencils and paper at the ready, eyes down, and here goes. Caligula was played by John Hurt. Scrooge's business partner was called Jacob Marley. As You Like It was set in the Forest of Arden. Handel's first names were George Frederick. The man who sounded like George Formby was in fact a chap called Alan Randall. The 10-pound turkey you'd have to roast for, well, I don't really know. You see, I've never roasted one. For a very long time, I suppose. The mystery quote, I've worked myself up from nothing, etc., etc., was, of course, Groucho Marx. Last year's Christmas lights were switched on by Prince Andrew. Bing Crosby starred in White Christmas with Danny Kaye and Rosemary Clooney. And the last official White Christmas occurred in London in 1970. If you've got them all correct, you've won a night out with Noel Coward's lot.
Quite for no reason. I'm here for the season. And high as a kite. Living in error with Maud at Cap Ferrer, which couldn't be right. Everyone's here and frightfully gay. Nobody cares what people say, though the Riviera seems really much queerer than Rome at its height. Yesterday night, I went to a marvelous party with Nuno and Nada and Nell. It was in the fresh air, and we went as we were, and we stayed as we were, which was hell.
Poor Grace started dancing at midnight and didn't stop singing till four. We knew the excitement was bound to begin when Laura got blind on Dubonnet and gin and scratched her veneer with a Cartier pin. I couldn't have liked it more. Oh, I've been to a marvelous party. I must say the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew would be doing 100 years hence. Dear Cecil arrived wearing armor, some shells and a black feather boa. Poor Millicent wore a surrealist comb made of bits of mosaic from St. Peter's in Rome. But the weight was so great that she had to go home. I couldn't have liked it more. People's behavior away from Belgravia would make you aghast. Well, so much variety, watching society scampering past. If you have any mind at all, Gibbon's divine decline and fall seems pretty flimsy, no more than a whimsy by way of contrast. On Saturday last, we went to a marvelous party. We didn't start dinner till 10. And young Bobby Carr did a stunt at the bar with a lot of extraordinary men. Dear Baba arrived with a turtle, which shattered us all to the core. The Grand Duke was dancing a foxtrot with me when suddenly Cyril screamed fiddle-dee-dee and ripped off his trousers and jumped into the sea. I couldn't have liked it more. To a marvelous party. We played the most wonderful game. Maureen disappeared and came back in the pier, and we all had to guess at her name. We talked about growing old gracefully. And Elsie, who was 74, said, A, it's a question of being sincere. And B, if you're supple, there's nothing to fear. Then she swung upside down from a glass chandelier. I liked it. Oh.
That was Patricia Routledge from the original cast recording of Cowardy Custard. If you're supple, you've nothing to fear like that. Unfortunately, it didn't hold true for the couple that Woody Allen picked up.
I shot a moose once. I was hunting upstate New York, and I shot a moose. And I strap him onto the fender of my car, and I'm driving home along the West Side Highway. But what I didn't realize was that the bullet did not penetrate the moose. It just creased his scalp, knocking him unconscious. And I'm driving through the Holland Tunnel, and the moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender, and the moose is signaling for a turn, you know. And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose on your fender Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I'm very panicky. And then it hits me. Some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go. I'll take the moose. I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We enter. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes. So I'm driving along with two Jewish people on my fender. There's the law in New York State.
Tuesdays, Thursdays, and especially Saturday.
The following morning, the Berkowitzes wake up in the woods in a moose suit. Mr. Berkowitz is shot, stuffed, and mounted at the New York Athletic Club. And the joke is on them because it's restricted.
Well, I'm afraid that winds things up for Mr. Berkowitz, and it just about winds things up for me. I've really enjoyed being with you for the last hour and a half. I'll leave you now with John Denver and the Muppets singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and I wish you the same myself.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. From now on, our troubles will be miles away.
Here we are, as in olden days, happy golden days of yore.
Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more.
Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Christmas Briars was presented by Richard Briars, written and researched by John Colley, and produced by Andy Aliff.